It was an unforgettable afternoon. Dad was sitting on a chair at the foot of my bed. We had been silent for a long time when he finally spoke. "Honey, you need to get angry. Angry enough to fight." After a long pause, he quietly added, "Nancy, if you don't put up a fight, you're not going to make it." I was too weak to ask the obvious questions. How can I fight? Where will I find the strength? Dad's anxious words and my unspoken questions were still haunting me at bedtime. So I mentioned them to Neil as he got into bed and wrapped his arms around me. Neil calmly said, "You and I will just have to approach this challenge one day at a time. You may not have all the answers, but you do have some, and that's the place to start. Avoiding the foods and chemicals that cause problems for you will eventually give you more strength to heal." He took several deep breaths before continuing, "I think we have to be realistic. The old Nancy isn't here anymore. She may never come back." That wasn't what I wanted to hear. Violence shook my body as I shoved away from him in a surge of anger. Forcing myself out of bed, I reached for the wall and cautiously began working my way toward the bathroom. As I locked the door and leaned against the sink, my anger turned to rage and my despair came gushing out. A shrill, eerie cacophony was echoing off the tiled walls. It was a sound so alien that it took a moment to realize it was coming from me. That intense, mournful wail was a lament for the dead, my lament for the old Nancy. Wow, it's unsettling, isn't it, to come into the middle of a story when you don't know how it began or what the ending might be? I felt the same way when my idyllic life was rudely interrupted by a storyline that made no sense at all. In 1971, I was a bike-riding, tennis-playing, happy wife with two delightful children. I loved gardening, hosting family dinners, singing in the church choir, and going to plays with my husband. By spring 1972, I had been bedridden for 6 months. I was in constant pain. I had lost 40 pounds in 12 weeks, and no one knew what was happening or why. All that I've shared is a true story, my story and Neil's. It's part soap opera with perils, conflicts, and frequent disasters. It's part medical mystery, one that took 45 years to solve. And it's part cautionary tale with a series of events in which something bad happened that could be used as a warning for the future. Good morning. My name is Nan Gregerson, and I'm here to talk about multiple chemical sensitivities. Let's begin with an excerpt from Allergy and Multiple Chemical Sensitivities Distinguished, an online article by Claudia S. Miller and Nicholas A. Ashford. The first comprehensive description of patients with MCS was formulated by Dr. Theron Randolph, who was doing research on allergic reactions to chemicals as early as the 1950s. Randolph traced some of his patients' difficulties to exhausts, cooking gas, perfumes, formaldehydes, and other chemicals. End quote. The following is taken from an online article by the Environmental Illness Resource Organization. Although there's no definition universally accepted by the established medical institutions, multiple chemical sensitivity experts came to this consensus on the criteria for diagnosis in 1999. 1, symptoms are reproducible with repeated chemical exposure. 2, the condition is chronic. 3, low levels of exposure, lower than previously tolerated, result in manifestations of the syndrome. 4, the symptoms improve or resolve when the incitants are removed. 5, responses occur to multiple chemically unrelated substances. And 6, symptoms involve multiple organ systems. Thus far, these criteria remain unrefuted in the published literature. End quote. In 2006, Pamela Reed Gibson, PhD, published the book Multiple Chemical Sensitivities, A Survival Guide. It's a treasure trove of information concerning the impact MCS has on a person's physical, psychological, medical, nutritional, housing, financial, and social needs. Gibson also explains symptoms can affect any bodily system, including respiratory, digestive, neurological, musculoskeletal, endocrine, immune, and others. She goes on to say, sometimes symptoms caused by chemicals are more unusual. I can attest to that. Here are examples of a few chemicals and the strange and troubling reactions they produced. With one normal dose of decongestant, my eyes became so dehydrated, they were too painful to open for the next 8 hours. One particular exposure to tobacco smoke caused my tongue to swell so large that my upper and lower teeth could not touch until 4 hours later. After a routine allergy test of local anesthetics, I was unable to answer questions or to spell the simplest words. That reaction lasted 8 days. And during a tooth extraction under general anesthetic, the anesthesiologist administered just a bit of pain medication, totally disregarding my warnings that my body was highly sensitive and extremely reactive to them. After that procedure, I had to spend an extra 6 hours in the recovery room, vomiting the offending drug out of my system. So at this point, are you thinking that my story sounds more like science fiction? It's okay. Sometimes it feels that way too. Once again, from allergy and MCS distinguished, who gets MCS? Those most likely to be affected are industrial workers, occupants of tight buildings, including office workers and school children, residents of communities whose air or water has been contaminated by chemicals. Here I would add people in war zones, and individuals who have had personal and unique exposures to various chemicals in domestic indoor air, pesticides, drugs, consumer products, and polluted outdoor settings. I belong to the last group. My reactions began in 1965 after I had applied weed killer to a lawn of our first house. Those first symptoms of extensive body pain subsided after a few years, but new reactions continued to appear and intensify. Several people in our fellowship have very serious allergy reactions to deal with, and I hope they find the help, support, and answers they need. But as far as I know at this point, just two other members, Lynn Flaming and Dean Littlepage, have issues specifically linked to multiple chemical sensitivities. in spite of extensive research for safe materials to use in remodeling our building, those two people must wait for the new chemicals to outgas more completely so they will be safe in here. Hopefully that will happen soon. In the meantime, Dean has written some of his story to share with us. Quote, "History matters. I grew up in an Exxon refinery town situated along the heavily industrialized Texas-Louisiana coast in what's now known as a cancer belt. At the time, before Rachel Carson's Silent Spring had created the impact it would later have, there was no EPA and no significant health or environmental protections. The refinery consisted of 4 square miles of refining and processing units that produced leaded gasoline and scores of other petrochemicals. Airborne chemicals were released so often that a thick chemical fog frequently hung over our town. The church my family attended in my nearby junior high sat directly across a chain link fence from a refining unit and storage tanks. Virtually the only thing separating a large swath of town from the refinery was fencing. My little league baseball team held regular practices on a field actually on the refinery grounds between processing units. For anyone who lived in that town, there was no avoiding toxic exposures. My first asthma attack came when I was still a babe in arms. In later years, I had other health issues that were diagnosed and treated as lead toxicity. Unlike my classmates and my sister, I've avoided cancer. But I have had a lifelong sensitivity to petrochemicals and other fumes." End quote. Why is knowledge of multiple chemical sensitivities important? Well, consider this. In 1973, 8 years after my MCS had begun, an article appeared in the Milwaukee Journal that stated, "Approximately 10,000 people in the U.S. have become severely ill with strange symptoms that cannot be linked to any known cause." And in January 2018, the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine reported, 25.5 million U.S. citizens are now suffering from this chemically induced condition." End quote. Yes, MCS is a rapidly growing problem. It is also a symptom of the human body's inability to cope with frequent long-term exposures to the vast number of chemicals that are constantly being introduced into our environment. Many theories have been proposed as to how MCS begins, but so far, no consensus has been reached. Dr. Gibson offers a list of 10 possible origins. Two of them seem relevant to my case. First, limbic kindling / neurogenic sensitization. If nerves have been sensitized by very small amounts of chemicals, a process known as kindling can induce serious reactions that normally would not be expected. Because the limbic system is connected to and involved in regulating so many body systems, its disruption could easily cause many of the symptoms reported by people with MCS. This theory also explains the spreading phenomenon, where people acquire more and more sensitivities without further chemical exposure. The second possible origin is immunological insults. many chemicals, including solvents, formaldehyde, hydrocarbons, and organochlorines, have been shown to suppress immune system function in humans. End quote. Just 3 years ago, lab tests revealed that my immune system works at 1/3 of the normal level. And that's another clue to my medical mystery. Considering the number of scientific possibilities for the existence of MCS, as well as the vast variety of symptoms and challenges that must be faced or solved or endured, is it any wonder that people with this condition are enraged and frustrated by the ignorant suggestion that their problems are all in their head? If I had a nickel for every time I heard that. The following excerpts are from Multiple Chemical Sensitivities Under Siege, an online article by Dr. Ann McCampbell, chair of the MC Task Force of New Mexico. Quote, corporations typically blame the victims, deny the problem, and try to avoid responsibility for the harm caused. The corporate response to people with MCS has been no different. In 1990, the Chemical Manufacturers Association vowed to work to prevent the recognition of MCS out of concern for potential lost profits and increased liability if MCS were to become widely acknowledged. Since 1996, the chemical industry has taken a bold new approach to the name for multiple chemical sensitivities. It has made a concerted effort to rename MCS idiopathic environmental intolerances. It's quite clear that its motivation is to get the word chemical out of the name, anything to distance the disease from its products. The pharmaceutical industry has been able to spread misinformation about MCS and to limit the amount of accurate information received by physicians and other healthcare providers through its financial influence over medical journals, conferences, and research. Because medical journals rely on pharmaceutical advertisements for funding, they are not likely to publish positive MCS articles. In fact, researchers supportive of MCS have long complained that it is very difficult to get their studies published in medical literature. End quote. While it's true, MCS can turn a person's life inside out and upside down, it's also true that wisdom and compassion can be found during one's struggles with it. Dean shares these examples and words of encouragement. Quote, it's easy to accommodate people with sensitivities. For years, I was part of the group that puts on the Bozeman Folklore Society's annual Contra Dance Weekend. One year, someone in attendance reported having MCS issues at the previous event and asked that we eliminate fumes and strong odors during the weekend. No worries. We simply added a polite note in our materials asking people to avoid perfumes and colognes. Then we replaced the old hand sanitizer and soap with no fragrance alternatives and brought in free and clear cleaning products for the nightly cleanup. But when we came to set up for the first dance in the Emerson Ballroom, we immediately smelled the strong fumes of a fresh, heavy VOC floor finish. After a thorough airing using several fans, the fumes weren't noticeable, and we continued to introduce fresh air into the ballroom throughout the weekend to deal with subsequent off-gassing. The weekend turned out to be great fun as usual, and no one had to endure headaches, trouble breathing, or other health issues from chemical sensitivities. Thank you, Dean. The seventh Unitarian Universalist principle calls us to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. While I had never heard the concept expressed that way until we joined the UUFB in 2007, I know that I've enjoyed and benefited from the support of that interdependent web my entire life, especially during the difficult times. While some people were quick to attribute my unusual symptoms to psychological problems, many others responded by offering their help. For over 30 years, my personal physician, Dr. K, diligently searched for explanations and answers to my illness. Friends called or sent cards, which kept me connected to the world during my 3 years of protective isolation. In the early 70s, when organic food was hard to find, three local organic farmers became our treasured source of meat and eggs. In 1975, we built a house in the country and created a 10,000 square foot organic vegetable garden. For years, our children and a high school friend of our son helped with our Memorial Day planting. One year, during a week of repeated nighttime rain and daytime heat, two exceptional neighbor children, brother and sister grade schoolers, sat at our kitchen table for six mornings, helping to remove the ends of the six bushels of beans that had been produced under those unusual weather conditions. At the end of our marathon, 8-year-old Derek gleefully announced that I was the green bean queen. To avoid polluting the church building, our empathetic minister would stand outside in sun, rain, or snow to smoke his pipe before service. His request that members refrain from wearing scented products inspired friends to sit in a circle around me to prevent anyone who hadn't heard the request from sitting too close. Hair salons, with their abundant chemical smells, were definitely off limits. So my friend Amy came to our house to cut my hair every month for 14 years. The year our bean crop produced less than expected, Amy showed up on our front doorstep with a bushel of beans from her organic garden. What a gift! 6,000 hand-picked beans. Oh, now you're probably wondering how I know that number. Well, picking all those beans made me curious. So I counted as I filled bushel number 6. It was an educational process and a great diversionary tactic. Because of many kind and caring people and several alternative medicine practitioners, my space in the interdependent web was filled with security, connection, and healing. There was also strength, stability, and peace in the changing of the seasons, the gifts of the earth, the symphony of wind and pines playing together, and the meadowlark serenade as I began weeding at first light. And through it all, there was Neil, living out the promise he made 56 years ago, for better or for worse. Here's a final quote from Dr. Gibson. The person with sensitivities is a challenge to the dominant company line that prescribes more chemicals, less healthcare, and growing corporate power. People debate whether environmental damage can be rectified or whether we have gone too far and things will never get better. Environmentally sensitive people are a very important part of this debate. It makes sense that the incidence of environmental sensitivities is a warning, of what is to come if we continue arguing rather than acting in regard to environmental cleanup." End quote. At this moment in history, our collective story is filled with strife, confusion, fear, and suffering. Sadly, this is nothing new. What's different is our scope of influence, our ability to have a negative impact on everything in the interdependent web, and our blatant disregard of Mother Nature's delicate balance and our own vulnerability. Over the years, Neil and I have discovered many ways to protect my health. Now we want to join forces with others who are working to solve the larger issues of corporate greed and environmental damage. Later today, or tomorrow, Dean and I will be posting a list of such groups on the listserv. If your favorite environmental action group isn't listed, please let us know. We will gladly add it on. Hopefully, the list will inspire more efforts on behalf of our planet's health and the well-being of all its inhabitants. If we choose to understand what's happening to our world and why, choose to rearrange and expand our priorities, choose to put up a fight and choose to defend the interdependent web of all existence, we all just might make it. May it be so.